My name is Alice, and I remember everything. Actually, my name is Will, and this is the podcast that is trying to forget everything it knows about films where helicopters explode. Now, films adapted from video games have a terrible reputation, from Uwe Boll's notorious House of the Dead to the fiasco of the Super Mario Bros. Movie, or, more recently, the box office disaster of Assassin's Creed. Their history is littered with critical and commercial failure. But the reason Hollywood keeps making them is the hope they'll be the next Resident Evil series. The franchise, which now includes 6 live-action films and 3 animated movies, has made over $1 billion at the box office. So on this show, we're going to be looking at the series' second installment, Resident Evil Apocalypse. To help me review the film, I'm joined by a man whose popularity you cannot explain or understand. It's Nick Rehack from French Toast Sunday. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm doing great, Will. Thank you for that introduction.
That's all right. I always like to build you up when you're a guest on one of these shows.
I appreciate it.
Now, when I approached you to do this film, I was shocked, I tell you, that you hadn't seen any of the Resident Evil series before. How do you explain yourself?
Growing up, I was what's called a bitch, and I didn't watch anything horror-related. So the Resident Evil games were horror-based, and I assumed, okay, the movies are horror-based as well, so I'm just going to avoid them. But over the last couple years, I've gotten away from that and exposed myself to horror films and genres that I normally wouldn't. So I'm slowly getting away from that, and I figured, you know, what better time to watch Resident Evil than now?
Well, I'm glad you've toughened yourself up sufficiently that you're ready to take the plunge into the series with me. Now, I'm guessing from what you've said that you know, I know you're a bit of a gamer, but I'm guessing from what you've said that you haven't actually played one of the Resident Evil computer games before.
I have not, but PlayStation, which I play on, has this thing where every month they give away like free games or whatever, and they gave away Resident Evil. And I'm like, okay, let's at least try this out. And I tried to play the game, but the controls and camera angles were absolutely terrible, and I barely got through like the second level. I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I'm not going to play this game. So I completely abandoned it. Since then, I've heard the games have gotten like really intense, really scary. There's a new one coming out, I think next year or something like that, and it's called Village, and it looks similar to like what is it, M. Night Shyamalan's The Village, where it's you know, this little like cordoned off area. It looks really, really fascinating, and I might actually pick that up, but I have next to no experience with the games.
Okay, well, it sounds, you know, given the fact that you haven't seen any of the films, you haven't played any of the computer games, it sounds like you're the perfect guest to have on this show.
Yeah, something like that.
You can't say I do my you can't say I don't research my guests properly. So you know, without any further ado, let's get stuck into Resident Evil : Apocalypse. So let's have a quick blast of the trailer and see if Milla Jovovich can remind us of her name.
My name is Alice. Worked for the Umbrella Corporation. There was an accident, and everybody died. Trouble was, they didn't stay dead.
In the pursuit of human perfection, accidents will happen.
There's been an incident.
How bad is it?
We're reopening the hive. I want to know what went on down there.
Sir, there's something in here.
Infection is spreading faster than anyone could have anticipated.
Seal the gates.
Our men are still out there.
Just do it.
We're expendable assets. I've just been expended.
Resident Evil Apocalypse came out in 2004. It was the follow-up to Resident Evil, which came out 2 years earlier. The plot for this one picks up directly after the events of the first film, where Alice escaped from an underground facility overrun by zombies. She now bands together with other survivors to escape the zombie outbreak, which has spread to the nearby Raccoon City. The villain of the piece in this film is the Umbrella Corporation, whose illegal experiments are to blame for the zombie outbreak. They seal off the city and intend to destroy it with a nuclear weapon in order to cover up their wrongdoing. Not before they capture our hero Alice, who now has augmented powers after being injected with the Umbrella Corp's experimental formula. There are a few other wrinkles to the plot, but I'm going to leave it there as I don't want us to get bogged down too much in storytelling minutiae. Heading up the cast once again is Milla Jovovich. She's joined here by Sienna Guillory, that's I'm just going to go with that, and Odette Fair as series characters Jill Valentine and Carlos Oliveira. There are also roles for Jared Harris, Ian Glenn, Thomas Kretschmann, and Mike Epps. Paul W.S. Anderson, who's the main creative force behind the series, or the Resident Evil series, wrote the script for this one. He didn't direct this time, as he was off making Alien vs. Predator, so taking the reins was Alexander Witt, a very, very experienced director of photography, but making his directorial debut here. Resident Evil Apocalypse has a 6.2 rating on IMDb and a 60% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It's interesting, though, to contrast those user scores to the critical reaction to the film, which was far harsher. And Resident Evil Apocalypse often crops up in lists of the worst video game adaptations. So with all of that out of the way, Nick, where do you land on this? Are you with the public, or are you with the critics?
I think I'm more on the critic side. I kind of enjoyed this movie. With the quarantine and everything locked down, I decided to revisit, or not revisit, but explore franchises that I haven't really done before. Terminator, Superman films. Resident Evil was next on the list, oddly enough, when you reached out. So I watched the original, absolutely loved it, had a ball. This one, I had fun, but I felt like it was missing some of the story elements that pulled me in on the first one. This one had a lot more action, a lot more stylized action, some of it completely absurd, which was fun, some of it kind of realistic. One thing I did notice, though, in this one, I think they pay a little bit more homage to the video game, at least in my eyes, because some of the camera angles are kind of bizarre, and you get those exact same bizarre camera angles in the game. I thought that was kind of fun. So just like something that I noticed visually.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I liked it more than I thought I was going to. I think the name throws me off, and I think it throws everybody else off. When you hear Apocalypse, you think of like this big world-ending event, and it didn't feel like that. I felt like this could have been called like Resident Evil, you know, Mutation or Resident Evil Evolution, because you know, like you said, the character of Alice kind of transforms, and you know, she gets these different kind of powers and becomes stronger from the serum and everything. And I don't know. So hearing that going into it, having expectations not met because of that, I think that also impacts it.
Oh, what you're saying is ringing a distant bell in my head, and frustratingly, I can't connect my mental synapses, because I think this film did have another title before it ended up being called Resident Evil Apocalypse. I think there was a little bit of a title change before this you know, actually sort of came out. So unfortunately, I can't remember what that original title was. So interesting, though, that you sort of, you know, you pick up on that, and the fact that clearly they you know, the people making this film were having a bit of wrangling themselves about what to call this film. But I'm interested in the fact that you seem to be, you know, much warmer on the first film than you were to this film. So what did you think that the original or the first film in the series had that this one didn't? I mean, you've already mentioned sort of the story element, so I just wondered, you know, can you expand on that a little bit?
I think it was just the intrigue for me. Not being too familiar with the video games, seeing how the story unfolded of you're in this mansion, and actually the mansion is a secret entrance to this massive underground facility, and how they just explore it. It felt like a video game, much like Dead Space or much like BioShock, where you're thrust into this world, you don't know much, and you're just kind of piecing the clues together as to what happened in this facility. Obviously, in the first one, we get a glimpse with the people in the facility being attacked and little glimpses here and there, but we don't get the full breadth until we have the characters going through and exploring the facility, exploring that world that's been built. So to see Alice at spoilers at the end escape and go to, now we're taking it a step further. Not only did it happen in the facility, but it happened in the city in which it's been inhabiting. To get to that next step of the world, I felt like there should have been more world building, a little more excitement of like, okay, this is how this one facility was impacted, but this is how this whole town was impacted. And I didn't get that. I didn't get those like little breadcrumbs to see what had happened. I think it was mainly just, here's a set piece, a little bit of, I don't want to say flimsy dialogue, but a little bit of like passable dialogue in order to get to like a big action sequence or like something fun and exciting. The action was good and a little more realistic in the first one, but this one they definitely upped the ante, especially when you have a guy bungee jumping out of a helicopter, like shooting zombies as he's flying down. Like, that's a great scene, don't get me wrong, but I just wish that there was a stronger plot than what was given. I don't get me wrong, I like Jared Harris and I love seeing him and everything. Shout out Chernobyl. But I feel like we could have done without him. It could have just been Alice and the people she meets up with just kind of exploring that the world and seeing what's going on. But I guess they don't want to do pretty much a rehash of the first one, so they have to do something a little bit different.
Well, it's interesting what you say about the amount of action in this film, because that actually was something that Milla Jovovich herself criticized about this film. That she said that the studio wanted this one to be a lot more action-packed, and you know, she was unhappy with the fact that some of the story elements were sacrificed in order to get that into this film. But one thing, though, that I think is very interesting to ask you, given the fact that you have literally watched these first two films back to back, is, you know, how did you think that the sort of sequencing worked between the first film and this second film? Because Resident Evil Apocalypse picks up almost immediately after the end of the first Resident Evil film. So you know, the introduction to Resident Evil Apocalypse it's a bit of an exposition dump, which, if you haven't, you know, if it's been a little while since you saw the first film, that's probably quite handy, or it could be, you know, entirely baffling. You know, so I just wondered, how did you find that sort of the kind of the segue from the first film into this film?
I think it worked well. I agree with you that it was a bit of an exposition dump. They kind of did a little bit of a flash forward and then back to where they were, which I think was nice. It's almost like, hey, here's where we're going. And you're like, how the hell are they going to get there? But yeah, I think it worked really well. I would have liked to have seen maybe parallel elements, like something is happening, and then maybe half an hour in, that's where we pick up with Alice coming out and seeing what's going on. I think that would have been a little more exciting, just to say like, hey, this is going underground, but this is going on in the real world that they have no idea about. But I think what they ended up doing in the end is fine, and it works. None of it felt like forced or like, oh, they're kind of ham-fisted. Like, no, it just kind of – it was as smooth as it could be.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about this particular franchise, or this particular action franchise, because it's a little bit unusual, certainly in terms of action franchises, because, you know, we've got a female lead here. So I wondered, you know, how did you find, you know, having Milla Jovovich, you know, fronting up this particular film? You know, do you think they kind of made the most of, you know, the fact they've got a female lead here?
I think they did. I think what works is the caveat that she's this super soldier essentially, but she doesn't realize that, and it's slowly coming together. It's not one of those like a Lucy where you know, she just plugs in, she learns something and off she goes, or like I think it was called Hannah, where she's like, you know, raised from a young girl to be this like master assassin. It's kind of, she was just this person and now she has all these abilities and she's slowly discovering what she can do. I think that adds to it. So it's not like a Tomb Raider where we already know the character has a backstory and we expect them to be able to do certain things. It's kind of, she's discovering as the audience is discovering, and there's a little bit of excitement there.
Yeah, I mean, I have a big soft spot for this franchise. And as anyone who's listened to an earlier episode of the Exploding Helicopter podcast, where we reviewed the film Ultraviolet. As they all know, I've got a big soft spot for Milla Jovovich, and I really love the Resident Evil franchise, and a large part of that is down to Milla Jovovich and her kind of performance in them. And I think she is really, really cool in this series and in this role. I think she exudes a quiet strength through her character. I really like the way that she underplays the character as well, and I think that kind of gives her this sort of almost like effortless cool persona in this film. And Resident Evil actually sort of gives kind of strong female roles quite regularly. So in the first film, you had Michelle Rodriguez in that mm-hmm, film mm-hmm. as well. In this film, you've got Sienna Guillory as the kind of character Jill Valentine here, and she is she's a real badass in this film. So I really love the fact that the kind of Resident Evil films flips the kind of the normal sort of gender prototypes that you get in these action films, and kind of gives you some female characters.
Absolutely. I mean, and not to keep looking at like other video game ones, but if you look at something like Tomb Raider, it feels like Angelina Jolie was just in like a big blockbuster picture. It doesn't, like Mila Jovovich as Alice, like it just feels believable. It feels realistic. And maybe because the film didn't have like the biggest of budgets to start with, or they went with someone, I don't want to say relatively unknown, but modern film fans, they're not really going to know who Mila Jovovich is. If you say something like, hey, name me an action, a female action star, they would probably say something like, Angelina Jolie from like Mr. and Mrs. Smith and the Tomb Raider, or they would say Scarlett Johansson because she's been Black Widow all these years with the Marvel franchise. So you already have these big established names, but for Mila to go in there and just knock it out of the park with that, I think it just adds this level of believability, and you're like, man, she really can do all that. And I'm fairly certain like she's done most of her own stunts in this series, or at least in this film, like unless I'm making that up. But I feel like that's legitimately a thing that she's been doing.
I think she definitely does a bit of the stunts alongside it. I think that there's a stunt in this film where she's running down the side of a skyscraper, and clearly, and I think in some of the fight scenes, it's clearly her doing them. So she's clearly up for taking part in the physical aspects of the production, which I think perhaps gives us an easy segue into talking a little bit more about the action sequences that we get in this film. So how did you enjoy or not enjoy the kind of the action sequences that we get here?
It was kind of hit and miss. Some of them clicked and worked really well for me, and other ones I just kind of felt were like ho-hum. As if they were not necessarily placeholders, but they were definitely like copying and pasted from other films. It just felt like it had been done before. Then again, there's only so many action sequences you can have involving zombies, so I understand it. But with a movie like this, they got a guy, again, bungee jumping out of a helicopter shooting guns, rocket launchers galore. They could have upped it a little bit. They could have done something a little more exciting. So if you're going to go absurd, like go a little more absurd.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of scenes here that I thought really could have done with a bit more thought and a bit better staging. And, there's a sequence here where you see this group of, you see Raccoon City is being overrun by these zombies, and you see this group of police and soldiers, they're kind of like bandied together, and they're trying to fight off the zombies. And that sequence, they're just standing in the middle of the street shooting these zombies, and that it's a really badly staged scene in my view. That could have been choreographed in a much more interesting way, where you have a sort of sense of the fact that there's just too many of these zombies. There's just more and more of them coming, and you see these soldiers and these police slowly falling back, and then they reach a point where like, okay, we've got nowhere left to fall back, and then the crisis sort of hits them. Whereas it's just in terms of how it's staged in this film, I mean, they just stand there and let themselves be overrun, and it's just quite a dumb sequence. And it's kind of sequences like that that I just thought I became a bit frustrated with, that I thought really could have been done better.
Oh, absolutely. And especially if this thing is mutating and changing as fast as it is and the infection is spreading as fast as it is, you'd want to add some real danger in there. So if they're like fighting back and fighting hard, you know, you show a couple seconds to a minute of, man, they are really kicking ass. And all of a sudden that tide just turns and they just get stomped out. And you're like, oh, no, this is serious. Like they're really it's really going to happen to them. And I think one thing that also kind of bothered me, too, is like some of the death scenes. Is it a thing where every zombie film has to have the scene where somebody just gets overtaken and they like dissolve into a crowd of zombies as they're just eaten alive and that kind of thing? Like after a while, I'm like, okay, like we come up with something new, like please.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a contractual obligation that there is a a scene along those lines. I mean, I also was a little bit frustrated by some of the kind of the filming or editing choices that were here. Like some of the sequences, I mean, there's a fight between this sort of super zombie called Nemesis and Alice about halfway through the film, which is really messily filmed. I mean, you just basically lose any idea of what's actually happening in that particular scene. It's very visually incoherent. And, you know, there's also a bit of a sort of lack of tension, I think, in some of the action sequences as well.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to bring that up with his battle as well. They do a decent job introducing the character. Obviously you want a bit bigger of a buildup because this guy is just a big Hulk and mess kind of thing. It's like a master blaster. He really should come thundering in and you're like, what more are they going to throw at us? Like there's no way this guy is coming after us. But like you said, it just feels like he's just kind of there. He does the usual destruction stuff. And then all of a sudden, you know, spoilers, he's just like a good guy all of a sudden. Or like he's helping, he's turning. There's no tension there. So you kind of check out for a little bit and you just kind of wait for those exciting action pieces.
I mean, what did you we're not going to sort of talk in detail about the ending, but what did you think about the end of this film? Because this Resident Evil Apocalypse, it's got almost like a unique ending in the sense of it ends about four times. You know, The Dark Knight, you know, has about three endings, but this one it has about four different endings. I mean, what did you make of how this film resolves?
I didn't like it.
I'm not surprised.
There's one point where it just ends, and I'm like, this is perfect.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is exciting. I want to see how this ending, how they're able to pull off what happens and continue it in the next film. I'm looking forward to that. Let's see what they creatively put themselves in a corner. Let's see how they get out of it. But to all of a sudden cut, and now we have like 20 more minutes to go, and here's Ian Glenn showing up. And I'm like, who's this guy? And they're like weirdly retconning him into these other things. And then it just kind of kept going. And I'm like, this should have ended a little while ago. Like the first one ends perfectly where it's like, where am I? What happened? Boom, it's over. And this one, I felt like they were trying to go for that again, but they missed the mark.
Well, let's change tack a little bit because, you know, like me, you're a big music fan, you're a record collector, and, you know, we like to talk about the soundtracks of films, you know, on occasion. And Resident Evil Apocalypse had a soundtrack of that was created by artists, so sort of inspired by type soundtrack. So you had a lot of, you know, well-known new metal type bands, you know, creating songs to be put out as part of this. And you know, Nick, I think you know, I got you to investigate that particular soundtrack, and because I wanted you to sort of pick out your favorite track from that soundtrack. So did you have a listen? And what did anything catch your ear?
I absolutely had a listen, and the thing that jumped out at me the most is just the first track. It's the song Vermillion by Slipknot. I'm a Slipknot fan. Doesn't really seem it. I saw them February 2009 on the All Hope Is Gone tour, and they crushed it. They did a version of the song and just absolutely killed it. And a lot of the rest of the other bands on the album, they used Killswitch Engage, Devil Driver, CKY, Deftones. It gave me that vibe like I was back in high school and like part of college going to like the Warped Tour and all of these like showcases. Like if I had a second pick, I'm going Killswitch Engage all day. But just hearing it, I'm like, oh, I'm back in high school. Like, oh man, this is cool.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up on metal in the sort of late 80s, early 90s. I was into kind of like death and thrash metal. When nu metal came along, I was a bit sort of sniffy towards it because it just seemed sort of like diluted metal for kind of for posers. I have subsequently sort of enjoyed some of the tunes of it. Although I am now appalled that. You know, there is now, you know, bands like, I don't know, people like sort of like Korn or like Limp Bizkit are kind of, you know, they're almost now like heritage bands. We're kind of, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, it's 20 years since our classic album. We're going to kind of come out and put that back on the road. And I'm like, oh my God, like, how do we get to this stage where, you know, like people are looking back on nu metal with nostalgia. But, you know, that's kind of by the by. In terms of, you know, my picks in terms of songs here, I quite enjoyed the Deftones song on here, where they're doing a song called The Chauffeur, which, incredibly enough, is a Duran Duran cover. Now, the Duran Duran song is off their first album, Rio, and I didn't mind Duran Duran back in the day. I don't like this particular song when Duran Duran is doing it, but when the Deftones are doing it, it's actually quite listenable.
Isn't that wild how that works sometimes? Like, what is it? Cars by Gary Numan. It's like, all right, I get it. But who did it? Fear Factory did a cover of it, and they just added a little oomph to it. I'm like, I can get behind this. And then there's footage out there somewhere of Nine Inch Nails doing a cover of it. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is where it's at.
I also quite liked the Rob Zombie track that's on here, Girl on Fire. Okay. It's quite stompy. It's quite groovy. I quite enjoyed that one as well.
I've never been a Rob Zombie guy. Rob Zombie, Marilyn Manson. I've never gone out of my way. If I hear the music on the radio, I'm probably gonna change the channel. But I just never. They never did it for me.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Okay, I think it's time for us to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
Hi, everyone. This is Tim Costa.
I'm Hermano da Silva.
And this is Walter Vinci.
And together, we are the First Time Watchers podcast.
Each week, we choose a movie to review that none of us has seen.
Watch it together.
And then discuss.
These movies could be new.
Or old.
Or on our list of shame.
You can find us on iTunes by searching for the First Time Watchers podcast.
As well as on Stitcher.
And we love interacting with our listeners, so if you have any suggestions, send us a tweet.
An email.
Or post to our Facebook page.
We'd love to hear from you.
That's right. I mean, it's all about interaction.
And talking about what we love, movies.
And you don't have to worry about us going on and on about this and that and the other. And
Shut up.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. This occurs at the climax of the film during the final showdown between Alice and her allies and the film's villain, Major Kane. During the confrontation, it looks like it's curtains for Alice when a couple of umbrella choppers fly in to finish everyone off. At that moment, Nemesis, a kind of super zombie that's been part of the forces of evil, suddenly switches sides. He bazookas one of the helicopters, which explodes, and causes the other helicopter to detonate as well. Nick, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
I liked it, but I didn't like it. I liked it for the fact that the shrapnel kind of causes the second one to blow up. I feel like I haven't seen that in an action film for a while. I haven't seen that kind of explosion in some time. So to see that felt good. But as soon as it happened, it was over. And I was really disappointed. Like, we don't really get a follow up. It blows up and then that's it. We have debris going everywhere, you know, propellers and everything. But I'm like, nothing, not a crash to the ground, not like it hits a building and that explodes too. Like, I wanted more. And I felt like they just took it away from me. They're like, look what we got, and it's gone.
You're just greedy, Nick. You're just greedy. What can I say? But
you show me all these fantastic explosions. I there is a bar. A bar has been set.
And this one didn't get over it. No, I can understand that. I mean, I did enjoy the fact that you see two helicopters here, and the reason the second helicopter explodes is because the first one has blown up, and I kind of enjoyed that sort of chopper on chopper action. I enjoyed that, which, as you yourself pointed out, is quite unusual. It does happen on occasion, but it is fairly rare, and I enjoyed seeing an example of it here. You do get to see the wreckage spinning out from the explosion. And you see some of the kind of the classic rotor blade spinning off cliche, which has really sort of developed over the years into a real sort of stock item of the exploding helicopter business here. But I kind of know what you mean here. I mean, in many ways, this is a very good exploding helicopter. You get to see two helicopters explode, they're kind of blowing each other up, you get all this wreckage spinning out everywhere, piece of it sort of knocks out Alice, which kind of plays into plot of the film, but somehow it feels like they just don't quite make the most of it.
They don't. Healthy explosions on both of them, great explosions. Visually, it's impressive. It almost looks like they genuinely blew up two helicopters. Like, the effects work is really well done. But it's just like, come on, man. Like, I want get a third guy flying in there. Get something for me. It's just it's over before it begins, and I just want more.
Okay, I think that just about wraps things up for this show. Nick, thanks for joining me once again. If people want more Nickery Hack, what should they do?
They should just go out and about and look at – there's a new podcast that's out. Mark Hoffmeyer and Jay Cluett, members of The Lamb, they have put out a new podcast called the Deep Sea Podcast. Deep Blue Sea Podcast. And they look at the film Deep Blue Sea. But unlike other podcasts that do like the Deep Blue Sea Minute or whatever, they actually look at it by DVD chapters, which I thought was interesting. So they cover a couple minutes – episode by episode rather than like one specific minute, and you kind of have to stretch it out. We had a great conversation. I was a guest on that, so absolutely check it out. Absolutely check out previous episodes of this great podcast, The Exploding Helicopter. We recently talked about another video game movie with Far Cry, and a really, really fun Bollywood film, Tigers in Dahai. Ah, chef's kiss. That is a great movie, so watch that and then listen to this. Outside of that, I'm just kind of hanging out. You'll find me on other episodes of other podcasts if you do a little bit of Googling. And, as always, FrenchToastSunday.com, but we're not really doing much at the moment. So there's nothing there. Really to plug Don't for that. Save your clicks for Exploding Helicopter.
Yeah, a wise choice. As always, don't forget to check out our website, explodinghelicopter.com. We'll be back soon. But until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Look at me. Can you remember anything? You remember your name?
My name.
I want to run a 24-hour observation. I want a complete set of blood work, chemical and electrolyte analysis by the end of the day.
My name. My name.
Sir, advanced reflex testing is also a priority. Your electrical impulse is monitored in a... Sir! What is it?
My name is Alice. And I remember everything.